Still Life, Frederica Potter, Book 2. Written by A.S. Byatt and read by Sophie Aldred.
Prologue. Post-Impressionism, Royal Academy of Arts, London, 1980. He signed the friend's book in his elegant handwriting, Alexander Wedderburn, January the 22nd, 1980. She had said, peremptory as always, that he was to go straight to room 3, where the miraculous stuff was to be found. Early. So here he was, a distinguished public man, also an artist of a kind, stepping obediently through room 1, French 1880s, and room 2, British 1880s and 1890s, on a lead grey morning, to the pale grey, classical quiet place, where the bright light shone and sang off pigment, so that the phrase miraculous stuff seemed merely accurate. On one long wall hung a row of Van Goghs, including an Arles Poet's Garden he hadn't seen before, but recognised, from charged descriptions in the painter's letters. He sat down and saw a bifurcated path, simmering with gold heat round and under the rising, spreading, blue-black-green, down-pointing veins of a great pine, still widening where the frame interrupted its soaring. Two decorous figures advanced, hand in hand, under its suspended thickness. And beyond, green-green grass and geraniums like splashes of blood. Alexander was not worried about whether Frederica would turn up. She was no longer in the habit of being late. Her life had schooled her to temporal accuracy, perhaps to being considerate. He himself, at 62, felt, not quite accurately, that he was now too old, too settled, to be put out by her or by anyone else. He thought with warmth of her certain approach. There had been a pattern, an only too discernible repetition in the events and relationships of his life, into which she had ruggedly refused to fit. She had been a nuisance, a threat, a torment, and was now a friend. She had suggested that they look at Van Gogh together, setting up another form of repetition, deliberate, contrived, and aesthetic. His play, The Yellow Chair, had first been presented in 1957. He did not like to think too closely about it, as he did not like to think too closely about any of his past work. He stared at the serenely impassioned garden made out of a whirl of yellow brushstrokes, a viridian impasto, a dense mass of furiously feathered lines of blue-green, isolated black pothooks, the painfully clear orange-red spattering. He had had trouble finding an appropriate language for the painter's obsession with the illuminated material world. He would have been lying if he had recorded only the more accessible drama of the painter's electric quarrels with Gauguin in the Yellow House in Arles, the distant necessary brother who supplied paint and love, the severed ear delivered to the whore in the brothel, the asylum fears. At first, he had thought that he could write a plain, exact verse with no figurative language, in which a yellow chair was the thing itself, a yellow chair as a round gold apple was an apple, or a sunflower, a sunflower. Sometimes he still saw the brushstrokes, as it were, in this naked way, so that his earlier thoughts of this garden had to be undone, the idea of black wings to be stripped from the painted leafage, the vulgar idea of blood splashes washed off the notation of geraniums. But it couldn't be done. Language was against him for a start. Metaphor lay coiled in the name sunflower, which not only turned towards but resembled the sun, the source of light. Van Gogh's idea of things had also been against him. The yellow chair, besides being brushstrokes and pigment, besides being a yellow chair, was one of 12 bought for a company of artists who were to inhabit the yellow house, the white walls of which should blaze with sunflowers as the windows of Gothic cathedrals blazed with coloured light. Not only metaphor, cultural motif, immanent religion, a faith and a church. One thing always linked to another thing. As the poet's garden, a decoration for the bedroom of the poet Gauguin, was more than it seemed.